It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My next guest is one of the Baltimore theater scene's most beloved and respected figures. Donald Hicken retired from the Baltimore School for the Arts in June after serving as the head of the theater department for 36 years. He was part of the team that helped plan the school back in the late 1970s, and he's worked with countless young people since then. Some of his most well-known students include Jada Pinkett Smith, Tupac Shakur, Tracy Toms, and Josh Charles. But for generations of School for the Arts graduates who landed in careers that didn't put their name in lights, the influence and impact of their classes with Donald Hicken still shines brightly. I caught up with Don Hicken back in June, right before he retired. Among the many accolades that you have received in your career, you were this year a finalist for a Tony Award for Excellence in Theater Education. This is an award that they actually created this year. There were some 4,000 theater educators across the country who were nominated, and only three were finalists. You were one of them. You're really good at this thing of teaching people how to be actors.
Well, thank you.
What do you think makes you good? You know, if you sort of step away from it, the way an artist steps away from a character, the character of Donald Hicken, the theater teacher, why is he so good?
Well, I think it's because I had wonderful teachers myself. You know, I came up learning from the best, and in a practical sense. I was lucky enough coming out of graduate school to land at the Hartford Stage Company. It was a young company then. It was only a few years old. We were turning our paychecks back in just to keep the place afloat. And there was a group of people there who were just really extraordinary, one of whom I ended up marrying. Who taught me so much about acting as an art form, watching her work. And I really had a front row seat for 43 years watching her work. And I learned a tremendous amount from her. And I was also lucky enough to have a brilliant designer, Santo Laquasto, who was at that time right out of Yale and was designing all but one of our shows. So he was doing five shows a year, and I was working directly with him. And he's just a genius, a brilliant, brilliant designer. And he really taught me how theater gets made. And so I learned the physical aspects. And of course, I'd gone to school and taken courses, and I'd been an actor, and I'd done some directing. So I knew, at least in a laboratory sense, how things happen.
And, of course, you learned over the past 3.5 decades what works, what doesn't, what works better, what works less well. And, of course, every actor is different. I mean, acting is one of those things, kind of like writing. It's hard to teach something that is so premised in individual artistry.
Exactly. There's no standard. I don't know two actors who work the same way. And I've been really lucky at School for the Arts to have a faculty who are extremely varied in their approach. And I think that's really the hallmark of the actor training program, the theater department at BSA, is that we have Richard Pilcher, Tony Sandias, Nancy Krebs, Denise Diggs, Shannon Glasgow. We have an amazing staff of people who all work in different ways, presenting the students with a varied approach. And then the kids over time kind of develop their own way of working based on what works for them. And what I try to do, I just seem to have an affinity for teenagers, and I don't know why that is. I discovered it when I was at Hartford Stage Company and started doing some outreach programs, and I just connected with them, and I try to treat them with respect because they deserve it. The kids that get admitted to School for the Arts go through a very rigorous process auditioning to get in. It's highly competitive. So the kids who were there are very gifted, and so we sort of start out with a mutual respect, and then we put them through their paces, and they begin with a gift. And we try to show them the discipline that it's required to manifest the gift.
And that discipline is interesting to me in the context of current pop culture, because now we've got YouTube that's full of everybody, quote unquote, performing. Right. And the work of being an artist, the discipline of being an actor, can somehow get lost in this haze of America's Got Talent, you know, American Idol, all this business, or, you know, people with really very limited capacity and skill, you know, consider themselves actors or singers. Mm-hmm. Is it hard, particularly for the groups of kids that you've worked with in the last 5, 8, 10 years, you know, because they've grown up in this YouTube culture. Is it hard to get them to understand that, you know, being an artist is a craft that requires a lot of work?
Yeah, the landscape certainly has changed, and pop culture has had an impact. I mean, it's like sort of, I call it the celebrity industrial complex. It's a star maker factory. It's a kind of a casino. And if you hit big. And it has nothing to do with the practice of the art. It's really about merchandising. It's a marketing strategy primarily. So what we expose them to is really the nuts and bolts of how you get it done. And it is a discipline, and it does take time, and it's an ongoing thing. It's, you know, unfortunately, we get people turned into kind of commodities. And you're not a commodity. It's not a noun. I mean, art is a verb. You know, it's a process, it's a practice, it's ongoing, it's never perfect, it can always be better, and you're always inside it, and everything that happens in your life you can use in it as part of the practice. And so it kind of works really well for teenagers, because teenagers are looking, who am I, where am I, how do I fit in the world, what's my identity, how do I relate to the people around me, and actor training really provides them with some tools for self-discovery.
Yeah, it's an interesting age, because they're old enough to be able to do some really serious work,
yeah.
But they're young enough to be somewhat malleable and certainly open to ideas and open to instruction and enlightenment.
Yeah, it really works for them. And the proudest I am, really, of our program, and I know that, you know, the wonderful talent that's come out and has and have careers out there, I'm very, very happy for them and very proud. But when a student comes to me and says, looking back on their high school experience, and says, this is the place where I found out who I am, I think, wow, that's a great thing. If you can do that by the time you're 18 years old and you graduate from high school and you have a sense of who you are and how you fit in the world, I think that's a real leg up,
yeah.
No matter what you do.
Donald Hicken is the outgoing head of the theater department at the Baltimore School for the Arts. It's Marilyn Morning. I'm Tom Hall. That's an important thing because, you know, for all the Josh Charleses who are landing roles in movies and on The Good Wife and Tracy Toms is on Broadway and stuff, they're the kids who don't end up being actors or musicians or sculptors, but they end up being complete human beings. So if you're in marketing or in medicine or in, you know, you're driving a bus, if you've taken the actor training course at the School for the Arts, what do you think those kids are taking to those other disciplines outside of the arts?
Well, I think they're bringing an active imagination. They're bringing a gift of vision, a sense of who they are, how they fit in the world, but also a way of looking at situations with a creative impulse. And if you look at any walk of life, whether it's medicine or, you know, any teaching or law or anything, the people who are the most celebrated, for the most part, are the innovators, the people who not only have the skill set but have imagination and have a creative approach to it. So exercising those muscles on the high school level is just a great thing, no matter what you do. But we also have a lot of actors out there and theater people out there and theater educators out there who are not people with a lot of visibility, but they are having an impact and they're working. We have a number of students who have founded their own theater companies in New York and in other cities, and several here back in Baltimore. I'm really delighted that a lot of our alums have come back to work in Baltimore and help develop the cultural landscape from which they came.
And you, of course, were at the ground floor of the School for the Arts when it was getting off the ground. David Simon, the mm-hmm. first, not the David Simon of HBO producer, writer fame, but David Simon, who was a musician, came from the Manhattan School of Music to be the first director of the school. You helped get it going.
Yes.
And you've seen it evolve over these many years.
Uh-huh.
So in these 35 years, the theater scene in Baltimore has exploded. I mean, there are any number of indie theaters that just didn't exist when you and I first came to town in the early 80s.
That's right. There is a real renaissance. And, you know, in the story of every man, you know, really starting without a home 25 years ago and now having this beautiful theater down on Fayette Street. I mean, that the growth of every man, I think, is a wonderful sort of metaphor for what's possible here in this town. And the small ensemble theater companies that are emerging are also really a wonderful complement to all of that. And the success of the Hippodrome, I mean, we're seeing a lot of theater on a lot of different levels. So we're having Broadway tours, we're having regional theater, center stage continues to flourish, but we're spawning some smaller theaters as well.
And it's interesting to me that it seems that the theater universe, like the classical music universe, which I know a little bit more about, is much less New York, L.A. centric than it used to be. That the Baltimore, Washington is a big market. There are ensemble members of the Everyman Company and people working regularly at Center Stage, people working at Woolly Mammoth and an arena stage in Washington who can make a very good living and stay very, very busy in just this neck of the woods.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing because resident artists are going to enrich a community on a lot of levels. And the more resident artists we have that we can actually provide a livelihood for is I think, a real plus because the culture struggles against the rigors of commercial production and being able to make a living here. Startup companies, I'm working with a young company now in Annapolis Shakespeare Company, and I'm really excited about the work that I'm seeing. And they're drawing talent from Baltimore and from Washington, forming a resident company, doing professional theater at a very high level. And seeing new theaters emerge, you know, is very, very exciting process. I seem to be, it's kind of my karma. I seem to be on the ground floor.
You're the ground floor of everything.
I'm on the ground floor of a lot of things, but I've directed a show there this past season, and I'm doing one this summer. We're doing Midsummer Night's Dream outdoors on the water in Annapolis, and it's just great to have that sort of startup energy again.
You have seen the school evolve, the school for the arts evolve in these past 3.5 decades, as the city has evolved in the past 3.5 decades. Your reflections on that. How is the school doing now as it settles into midlife?
Well, I think the school is thriving. It's still a magical place. And when people walk through the door and feel the energy in there, those young people and spending half their day in the studio and the other half in academic classes, and the academic program there is rigorous and inventive, and the kids are being well prepared for college. But then they have the other half of the day where they're just able to practice and work together. They cross disciplines with one another in academic classes, and now we're looking to foster more collaboration among them on the arts side. So the school is still evolving, still growing. I think it's not settling in. Chris Ford, who's the new director as of 2 years ago, Chris has brought some wonderful new initiatives. I think, you know, my leaving, Roz Conklin's coming in to take over the running of the department. A lot of the staff are remaining. Most all of them are remaining. So I think there's continuity, but there's also innovation. And so it's not stagnating. If anything has changed over the years, the school's grown some in terms of number and in terms of its physical plant. I think, you know, we had the big $30 million expansion and renovation number of years ago, and that's really had a wonderful impact. We now have, you know, we now have really the kind of studio spaces that we need. We were struggling back in the old Alcazar days, you know, with our studios. We were inadequate, at least in the theater program we were. Now we have some good studios, and I think the program's now matching the quality of the instruction. The school system, I think, like most public education systems, continues to struggle with standardized testing and with a lot of issues that I think are as yet unresolved in terms of their merit. But School for the Arts continues to be its own entity because we are unique. I mean, we're much more on the vocational side. You know, we're not teaching theater as a core curriculum subject. I'm working with kids who I believe have potential for a career as professional actors, directors, designers, technicians. And so I'm approaching them that way. So it's a very different kind of learning environment.
Yeah, it's professional training.
Exactly. It's much more on the vocational side.
Mm-hmm. And you have always yourself, you and Tana, your wife, who we lost a couple of years ago,
yeah,
and a huge loss to this theater community and to you, of course, you have always had one foot in the professional theater world and another foot in the training world. As you work with actors that go from, you know, 15 years old to 85 years old, what do you think the unique capacity of theater is to communicate about the human condition to people, theater as opposed to literature or music or dance?
Well, I think it engenders an empathetic response. I think when you're in the room, you know, the thing I love about live theater is that it happens in the air between the actors and the audience. It's a thing that is only there briefly. And if you miss it, you're not going to be able to pick it up again. That was that. And what happens, I think, is that there's a connectivity that occurs. The audience, the actor kind of takes what's written on the page and returns it to lived experience, assuming that the writer had taken lived experience and turned it into words on a page. So that process of illuminating a text and living a text creates a bond with the audience that when it's done right, you feel it. You know, sometimes you hear it. It's laughter sometimes. It's tears sometimes. But you also feel that connectivity in the silence, in the quality of the silence. And you know that you walk out of that play, if we've been doing our jobs, you walk out of that play a slightly different, more careful, more insightful, more empathetic being.
Donald Hicken retired in June as the head of the theater department at the Baltimore School for the Arts, a position he held for 36 years. And by the way, Don will be plenty busy in his so-called retirement. Next month, he's directing a production of Wait Until Dark at the Everyman Theater. That show begins September 7th and runs through October 9th. We've got a link to the details on our website. Come on over to wipr.org/Marilyn Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up, a conversation about Muse 360, an organization that weaves together dance, performance, and history to teach young people of color about the proud traditions of their culture. But first, here's a tradition that we're very proud of here at WIPR, a Baltimore story with Gil Salmon.